Today on Bold Steps with Mark Jobe, we'll learn how a crisis prepares us for our calling.
We start out with the fact that God is on the throne, He's in control, that nothing happens by chance. And God is not always the author of everything, but He is the redeemer of everything. And so we wisely need to be asking ourselves, God, what are you up to in this crisis? What are you doing?
Welcome to Bold Steps with Mark Jobe, Senior Pastor of New Life Community Church in Chicago and President of Moody Bible Institute. Well, 2020 has not turned out like many of us had hoped, and we've heard from numerous people, Mark, who are asking, God, what are you up to? Is there a plan in all of this chaos? But we've been talking about this now for several months together. God is up to something here, isn't He?
He is up to something, and I know that our listeners feel like it's been very long. I mean, we're over 6 months into this. This message actually was delivered at Maranatha Camp.
Mm-hmm. Up in Michigan.
Up in Michigan, which is just this camp, a wonderful camp that's been around for a long time. And Moody every year has what we call Moody Week.
Uh-huh.
And so speakers from Moody connected to the Institute go up there.
And you were able to do it with the audience right there in front of you?
Yeah, it was a little different because people had masks on and this was their first event they had, but it was great. It worked out okay. But this message, I think, is a message that helps us understand what is God doing in the midst of this crisis and what may God be doing in your life to prepare you for the future through crisis.
We're all ears. We need this perspective. Let's turn to Genesis chapters 39 and 40 now as Mark begins today's message.
A couple days ago, my wife and I celebrated our wedding anniversary. And I was jogging down memory lane and remembered that day that I looked at her nervous and a little trembling, and I said these huge commitments, yes, I do, and then walked down the aisle again, and she was all dressed up in her wedding dress, beautiful. We went down the stairs. Back in those days, they threw rice, got some rice thrown at us, got in the car with cans stringed along in the back of the car, drove through the neighborhood, and I was just elated in the backseat of the car thinking a new chapter is started. And we stopped at a stop sign, and there was a scruffy guy with a beard and a brown bag and a bottle inside that said, "Hey, buddy." So I rolled down the window, thought he was going to congratulate me. He shook his head and said, "The worst decision of your life." And then I went on. But you know, here's what I know. That I'm sure if I would have gotten out on my wedding day, which I did not, and had a conversation with him, I'm sure that he had a terrible experience, that his experience with marriage was a bad experience. And so his interpretation of my decision was a terrible one. And I also understand that as we talk about the crisis, I call it the trilogy of crisis, that not everybody's experience has been the same. Some of you have sort of just glided through this crisis almost like it was barely nothing, and you've been celebrating the fact that you could work at home and not have to commute. And others, it's been a mega life-changing, drastic crisis in your life. But I think that we should all be asking ourselves as followers of Jesus, what is God up to? I call it the trilogy of crisis because although it started with COVID-19 about 4 months ago, it's dominoed into two other crises. And let me just name them off for you. Number one, we had a health crisis. COVID-19, none of us knew what that was 6 months ago. But we soon discovered that this coronavirus was making its way throughout the world via our transportation and our globalization, and we soon discovered that all of us were affected by it. In fact, this global pandemic shut down our nation and many other nations. We have not seen something like this in 100 years in the United States of America since the Spanish flu in 1917 to 1919, where millions of people died. So far, there's been around 500,000 deaths in the world and about 120,000 deaths in the United States of America, and many people that have gotten sick because of this. And so it has been an unprecedented health crisis. Shortly into that, we shut down restaurants, theaters, shut down many businesses that required people to gather together. And so it led to a second crisis, a financial crisis, an economic recession. Over 40 million Americans filed for unemployment. The U.S. suffered job loss not seen since the Great Depression. One in every five households were deemed food insecure. And people were predicting a huge recession. We're still trying to figure out where it's going to land. But many, many people found themselves without a job. Some people really, really struggling economically. Businesses shuttering, especially depending on the industry that you were in. But something like we haven't seen in decades and decades, some people say, since the Great Recession. And then thirdly, about the time that the COVID had stymied a little bit, about the time that we felt like it was time to start to open up our economy, our restaurants and other facilities, we were hit with the third crisis, civil unrest and racial crisis. And this racial crisis started with the death of George Floyd and then spread out in our cities and around the nation in a way that we had not seen really ever in this country before, far outbidding what happened in the 60s, spreading to other cities around the world, other nations around the world as well. A major, major civil unrest, racial crisis, so health crisis, financial crisis, racial crisis, and we have all been touched in one way or another by these crises. Counselors say that the spike in anxiety, fear, depression has escalated exponentially as people wonder what's happening, what's going on. Grandparents that haven't seen their grandkids and been able to hug them or touch them in months. Some people that have not been able to go to their work in months. And I think as believers in Jesus Christ, we start out with the fact that God is on the throne, He's in control, that nothing happens by chance. And God is not always the author of everything, but He is the redeemer of everything. And so we wisely need to be asking ourselves, God, what are you up to in this crisis? What are you doing? And I want to bring your attention to a passage found in Genesis chapter 39 and 40. It's the story of Joseph. Before I read this passage, let me say that I know that there's people in a lot of pain. I'm the president of Moody Bible Institute, but I also serve in pastoral ministry in the city of Chicago in some pretty tough neighborhoods. I personally know six people that have died due to COVID-19 related illnesses. The last one a week and a half ago, 68-year-old lady that greeted at the church door and just a beautiful woman that came to Christ in our church. I've seen grown men weeping over the fact that they can't put food on the table for their family. I've seen and talked to teenagers that have attempted suicide because of the overwhelming depression and anxiety and fear that they sense around them and being isolated from friends and looking at the future in a dark way. I've seen the tensions on the streets of Chicago and the protest and the animosity and the difficulty and the polarization that exists there. This has been a very, very challenging time. When I look at Joseph's story, and early on, When COVID started to hit, my attention was drawn immediately to the story. So I've lived with the story of Joseph for a couple of months because I sensed that God was speaking to me as I read his word through Joseph early on in this crisis. And I want to share with you what I believe that God has been up to during this crisis. If you remember the story of Joseph, he's a 17-year-old young man. He's got a brother, a younger brother, Benjamin, and he's got a bunch of stepbrothers. It's a toxic, dysfunctional family. No doubt about it. There's favorites, there's stepbrothers, there's multiple mothers, there's animosity, jealousy. I mean, it's not a very sane family. But Joseph, at the age of 17, he has a dream. It's a God dream. Not just one dream, he has multiple dreams. And in this dream, he gets this sense that God is going to use him, that he's going to be influential. It's not his own imagination concocting stories of grandeur. It's a God-given dream in which he senses that he will exercise influence in the future. He does something that he probably shouldn't do. He shares it with his brothers. In Genesis chapter 37, verse 5, it says, "And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more." They already hated him because he was the favorite of the father, but after he shared the dream in which he felt like he was going to have a lot of influence, they hated him even more. If you're writing down notes, taking notes, I want you to write this down today. I'm talking about what is God doing in crisis. I believe that sometimes we need a crisis to prepare us for the challenge of our calling. It starts with a dream with Joseph, it leads to intense crisis, and it ends with a powerful destiny. You know, none of us like crisis. We want to avoid crisis, get out of crisis. We want things to go back to normal. We want to be able to sing in church without masks. We want to be able to go to a restaurant and eat there without wiping our hands. We want to be able to go to the store and shop without putting the mask on. We want to be able to meet with our friends without wondering, is it a hug, elbows, high five, not exactly sure how we should respond to people. We want things to go back to normal. But I believe that we would miss the point if we do not ask ourselves, God, in the midst of this crisis, what are you doing? And I believe that God is doing something. In fact, if you look at the story of Joseph, you realize that God gave Joseph a compelling dream, a dream that was God-given. He didn't make it up, a dream of destiny, a dream that he would influence. And to prepare him for his dream, God takes him to the school of crisis.
You're listening to Bold Steps with Mark Jobe, and for more tools and resources designed to help you live out your faith with boldness and authenticity, visit boldstepsradio.org. Mark's message continues in a moment, but coming up at the close of the program, I'll tell you how you can get a copy of Dr. Gary Chapman's book on improving your family relationships. It's called The Do-It-Yourself Guide to Building a Family That Lasts. So be sure to have pen and paper handy to write down our contact information. More on that later, but first, let's return to the second half of this message called What Is God Up To? Mark is going to show us how God allowed the crisis in Joseph's life to shape and move him.
The first crisis is his brothers betray him. They're going to kill him, but then they decide, hey, let's not kill him. That's a little too drastic. One of the older brothers talks them down, and so they decide to do something a little less severe. They sell him. They sell him to a band of Midianites that are on their way to Egypt, and they betray their own brother, and they tell the father that he's dead. Second crisis. Not only is he sold, but he's sold into slavery. And so Joseph, who is the favorite of his father ends up being sold into slavery, transported to another country with another language, in which he's treated like a piece of property with no rights of his own, taken, stripped of his identity, stripped of his ability to communicate, put in Egypt, serving as the lowest echelon of society that you could serve in, and he's treated as a slave. And then, if that weren't bad enough, a few years later, he's actually falsely accused because the boss's wife comes on to him. He rejects her advances, and he is accused falsely and sent into prison. So that's his third crisis. A trilogy of sorts. And here's what struck me as I read the story of Joseph. God allowed this crisis. God allowed him to be betrayed. God allowed him to be sold into slavery. God allowed him to go into prison. God allowed the crisis. In fact, the crisis became a gift to Joseph, informing and shaping him for the destiny of his calling. God was using the crisis to shape his heart, using the crisis to develop his skills, and using the crisis to help him discover gifting that he did not know he had. It was through the school of crisis that God was preparing Joseph ultimately for the dream that he had given him as a 17-year-old. Now, I'm sure that if we would have interviewed Joseph in the middle of the crisis, and Joseph, how are you doing with it? Hey, are you glad God's taking you through crisis? I'm sure that he would have been pretty perturbed about it. But I want you to notice from that perspective that God is actually taking Joseph through a crisis. And as I started to read and started to listen to the story of Joseph and think about this for a moment, I realized that this is not unusual. That if you look at the pattern of Scripture, it seems like as God prepares people for calling, for influence, if God prepares people, he often does it through the intensity of crisis, the fire of crisis. I started thinking of some well-known Bible characters. Moses, he's called to be a liberator. He discovers, has this sense that he's going to be a leader. He tries to go about it in his own power and ends up 40 years in the desert as a shepherd of sheep. Humbling him, breaking him. 40 years of crisis before he has a burning bush encounter experience that actually, we know him as the great liberator, the person that wrote the first five books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch. We know him as that, but we forget that he went 40 years of crisis. I thought of Gideon, who the angel of the Lord appears to in the book of Judges and calls him a mighty warrior. But Gideon was hiding when God called him a mighty warrior. He had been 7 years hiding under oppression, fear-filled, very little sense of destiny or that God could use him. Called himself the smallest of his tribe. Yet God used the crisis to shape in him a mighty warrior. I think of Jonah. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, and Jonah ran. He didn't want to go to Nineveh. And so in his running, he ends up in the belly of a whale for 3 days, the darkest, most difficult season of his life. And then the whale spits him up on the shore of his calling. But he had to go through crisis to be prepared to speak to Nineveh. I think of David. Samuel the prophet anoints David. This young shepherd boy, and there's oil dripping down his face with the anointing of kingship, and yet he rises up and goes back to shepherding sheep, an unknown shepherd. And then his first real encounter is with this warrior named Goliath, and he has to go through this crisis, this testing of his faith, before he enters into the calling of being the king of Israel. I think of the Apostle Paul in the New Testament, who saved on the road to Damascus, has a radical conversion and wants to jump into his calling right away, but ends up spending about 14 years in the desert while he's being trained and formed and discipled and mentored and changed. I think of Hannah, who is called to be a mother and deeply desires to be that mother, but has to spend years of painful suffering before she gives birth to Samuel the prophet. I think of Abraham, whose name was Abram first. And the prophet says, "You will be the father of a great nation." He has a dream, a powerful, compelling dream. And he says, "Look at the stars of the sky. Look at the sand and the seashore. It will remind you of the nation that will come from you." And every day when Sarah calls him for dinner, she says, "Abraham, father of a great nation," and he has not one child. He desires one. 25 years later, he still doesn't have a child. A crisis of faith, a difficult trial, a difficult time preparing Abraham for who God wanted him to be ultimately. And I could go on and on. The point that I'm making is this. Listen to me well. It is not that strange that as God begins to prepare you and I, His church, His people, ministries, as God begins to prepare us, that He takes us through crisis in order to equip us. Joseph discovered that he had the ability to interpret dreams. He never knew that except in crisis. Joseph discovers the gifts, the skills of leadership, administration, because as a slave, he rose up to head up Potiphar's household, which required all that, and later on he would need that. He would need those skills desperately, but he had to learn it in crisis, preparing him for his call, for his influence, for his destiny. And I've been asking myself, God, are you doing that to your church? Are you doing that to the people of God? Is there some things that we have had to learn in the fire of crisis that maybe we weren't aware of before? Things that we had to deeply understand before you get us ready to influence people, maybe at a personal level? Are the things that you are doing, God, to break us, to bring us down, to have us lean into you? Are there things in our character that we have to learn, skills that we need to learn? Are there things that are our perspective of life that you are saying, church, I have to shake you, wake you up, prepare you through this crisis for what my calling is? Secondly, if you're taking notes, write this down. It's at the intersection of our deepest trial and God's strongest presence where we learn the most. Let me say that again. It's at the crossroads or the intersection where your trial is the deepest, where you're most agonizing, where the moment is the darkest, and where God's presence is the strongest, that you learn the most. Those are the transformative moments. The moments in which your soul is awoken to who God is. It's at those moments where your spirit is revived. It's at those moments where you are changed. But it's in the dark moments where you sense the presence of God the strongest. Those are the times that you learn the most. And can I tell you the truth? Sometimes following Jesus makes your life more difficult. We're never promised we're going to avoid trials. We're never promised that hardship isn't going to come our way. We're never promised that crisis isn't going to affect us. What we are promised is that in the middle of it, God's presence will be with us.
What a great message from Mark Jobe here today. But that wraps up another week of bold and inspiring Bible teaching from Mark Jobe right here on Bold Steps. If you'd like to hear this message again, or if you'd like to hear any of Mark's previous sermons and series, you'll find all of our archive messages online at boldstepsradio.org. And while you're on the website and have some free time this weekend, be sure to check out Dr. Gary Chapman's book that I mentioned earlier. It's called The DIY Guide to Building Family Relationships That Last. Explore a bevy of ways to recharge your family life and keep your perspective on what's really important in life, even in the midst of a pandemic and economic uncertainty. This is certainly one book that gives you the practical tools you and your family need to transform your ho-hum rhythms of life into a legacy that lasts. We'd love to send you a copy when you give a gift of any amount to support the ministry of Bold Steps. Just visit boldstepsradio.org or call 844-615-7363. That's 844-615-7363. And then before Monday rolls around, be sure to ask for our new Bold Stepper Weekly. We all know how Mondays can be tough to dive into, but with our weekly email, you'll get a dose of inspiration and encouragement from Mark to help you start the week off right. It's delivered to your inbox each Monday morning, and you won't want to miss it. It's free. Sign up today at boldstepsradio.org. I'm Wayne Shepherd, wishing you a wonderful weekend. Be sure to join us again Monday when Mark concludes this special series. It's called What is God Doing in This Crisis? And you'll hear it here Monday on Bold Steps with Mark Joe. Bold Steps is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute.